B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. Lots to talk about on the News and Comment podcast today. It's available free everywhere we distribute the podcast, including on YouTube. And I hope you'll share it far and wide with your friends and associates. So the whole world is condemning the use of alleged chemical weapons in a town in Syria in Idlib province yesterday. And the video is grisly. You see people in contortions lying on the ground. You see children foaming at the mouth. You see a lot of dead children. And this is being taken at face value by the corporate media and political leaders in the United States and, in general, everywhere except Russia and Syria. And as your cranky skeptic, I have to ask some questions here. Because this incident creates a new red line for Trump, like the one that Obama kind of set up for himself and then never crossed. It's reminiscent of the use of chemical weapons in the Damascus suburb of Ghouta in 2013. And at that time, John Kerry, 32 times or something like that, says, we know Syria did it. We know. And later it was established that most likely the Syrian military was not responsible for that. It was a false flag created, concocted, by one of the well-funded militant groups, either the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda, or one of the myriad of proxy fighters who are well-supported by outside interests, particularly in the areas of the Gulf and Saudi Arabia. So I will recap in a moment all of the corporate media conclusions that within hours of this event, it's just very clear to all of these experts that Syria did it. And I will acknowledge that it's possible Syria did do it. And I will acknowledge that I'm not on the ground there, and I have to rely on second- and third-hand reports, just like you do. But I've linked in the show file for today's podcast to an interesting piece published at Information Clearinghouse and written by Paul Antonopoulos, who is a college professor at Charles Sturt University. He is a lecturer, I don't want to promote him too far, and also at Western Sydney University. And he asks a lot of obvious questions. Now we're told that more than 100 people have been killed, hundreds injured in this incident. And we saw the Italian politician who serves as high representative of the European Union, her name is Federica Mogherini, almost immediately say that the Assad regime bears responsibility for this awful Syria chemical attack. Then Benjamin Netanyahu quickly joined in on the condemnation. And that, of course, is a red flag for me. Then we learn, and I mentioned this yesterday in my coverage, that the so-called white helmets, who are described as affiliated with NATO and others, they are the primary source of these reports, and that fuels my skepticism even further. Then, looking at some of the pictures that originate from the scene, we see white helmets handling injured people and corpses without any gloves or safety equipment or gas masks. And the nature of sarin is that within seconds of exposure to it, the effects begin to target the muscle and nervous system. An almost immediate release of the bowels and the bladder. Vomiting is often induced. When sarin is used in a concentrated area, it has the likelihood of killing thousands of people. Yet, with such a dangerous gas and the white helmets treating bodies with little concern to their own exposure, well, that does raise a question. Then there are tweets coming from Dr. Shahjul Islam, who takes time out from trying to treat the individuals affected by this incident to say, this is the latest from the sarin attacks. Patients are flooding in. Our hospital is getting full from the sarin attack today. Anybody who wants evidence, I will video call you. And the author of this piece, Paul Antonopoulos notes that he looked up Dr. Islam, who is a Brit, and says that he is no longer registered as a physician in the United Kingdom. Now, I don't know if that is a strike against his record or not, but it is a fact. So he goes on to say that it's known that about 250 people from nearby towns of Majdal and Khattab were kidnapped by Al-Qaeda fighters last week. Local sources have claimed that many of those dead from the chemical weapons were those from Majdal and Khattab. A UN weapons inspector, referring to the 2013 attack in Ghouta, said there was no evidence that the government had committed the atrocity. But once these media memes get in circulation, they take on a life of their own. And so we may have an investigation months from now that clears Russia and Syria, the two most frequently mentioned suspects, for responsibility in this incident, and we may find out facts support that notion. But this quick rush to judgment is, I think, quite concerning and is possible evidence of what some people would call a false flag attack. And while it's true that the Syrian government under Assad says that it disposed of all of its chemical weapons, it has been using chlorine in very crude so-called barrel bombs dropped from helicopters. But according to eyewitnesses, the attack on the town of Khan Sheikhoun was conducted by a Russian-manufactured Su-22 fighter jet that is not able to carry chemical-laden bombs. Now, I don't know the particulars of that, but if this is true, that's a very interesting argument or potential contradiction. He goes on to say, whether they were gassed by the militant forces or the airstrikes caused a terrorist-controlled chemical weapon factory to explode, that was the reason offered by the Syrian sources that I quoted yesterday. The gruesome deaths of children lay in the hands of the militants. Now, consider that on Friday, the White House asserted, and I led my news and comment podcast on Monday, agreeing with the position of the Trump administration that it is crazy, it's irrational, it's incoherent to suggest that we can take down the Islamic State from Syria and take out the Assad government at the same time, and that everything's going to be fine. And when Trump, the reality TV star, embraced that reality, I said, well, he's on the right path. But now he is hedged in. And he's made comments that this is Obama's fault, that it's atrocious, that he deplores it. But he is kind of cornered, and if this is a false flag, you could argue that this is a way to keep Trump from abandoning the goal of taking down Assad from power in Damascus. And this is a very complex situation, there's no doubt about it. Tom Friedman at the New York Times today acknowledges the fundamentals of this struggle between Sunni and Shiites in the Middle East. But, of course, he has to get in his licks and join the consensus chorus. He says, on Tuesday, Trump got a lesson in foreign policy via a truly vile poison gas attack on Syrian civilians, many of them children, reportedly perpetrated by the pro-Russian, pro-Iranian murderous regime of Bashar al-Assad. Now, the word reportedly gets lost in his modifiers of the Assad regime, pro-Russian, pro-Iranian murderous. And how many people who are, you know, moderately informed could read this and come away thinking that Tom Friedman is undecided about the responsibility of the Assad government. And I think I've linked to his piece. Yes, I did. And you can read it. And there's actually some sensible commentary in there, including a swipe at Rex Tillerson. He says, last week, someone named Rex Tillerson, who I am told is the U.S. Secretary of State, declared that the longer-term status of Assad will be decided by the Syrian people. So the corporate media brushback here is that Trump better accept that Assad has to go, too. And I see this as a way of creating a red line that forces Trump to conform. And Friedman, without using the term no-fly, advocates, like Hillary did, the least bad solution is a partition of Syria and the creation of a primarily Sunni-protected area, protected by an international force, including, if necessary, U.S. troops. Tom, tens of thousands of U.S. troops would be required to accomplish that. Then Peter Baker, writing a news analysis piece at the New York Times, but where other presidents might have used the moment to call for the departure of Syria's authoritarian leader, Bashar al-Assad, Trump's spokesman dismissed the notion as impractical because it would not happen. And I hate to agree with Sean Spicer. I mean, that guy's just a joke. But occasionally they give him scripts that I happen to agree with. So you can see what they're doing. The Guardian newspaper from London, often a critic of the American government in very, very credible ways, says the evidence so far points in one direction, not the least because sarin is not easy to produce. Then they refer to the Ghouta attack and blame that on the Assad government without acknowledging the serious doubt of that claim. The suspicion, says The Guardian, is that Tuesday's strike is retaliation by an increasingly confident regime for the military pressure it's faced in the area. Having pushed back, it wanted payback at the cost of civilians. Now, we know, just like the Iraqi National Congress and that guy Chalabi, who was on the payroll of the CIA and the Pentagon at different times, he was desperate to get the U.S. to invade Iraq and take down Saddam Hussein. And he's admitted afterward that he would have said anything to accomplish that. Well, we've got a whole complex range of players in Syria, and they desperately want the United States to get involved. And their goal is to get us to take down Assad. What's the best way to achieve that? Gas some children? Well, that is one way. Vice News, which often, differentiates itself from the mainstream corporate media in this country, is all on board. I guess they're looking for the war porn. They love to show video of dead bodies. Anyway, their headline reads, "Completely untrue. Russia says Assad isn't responsible for Syria's chemical attack, but no one is buying it." So, the consensus here is that we've all got to agree that Syria did it, and just overlook the fact that we don't have any evidence of that, and there's been no investigation, and it's simply premature to reach some conclusion like that. A U.S. official told Reuters that Russia's claim does not comport with reality. Well, what the hell does Donald Trump know about reality, other than the fake stuff on TV? So there are serious questions raised by the corporate media that supports the notion that Syria did this. And again, sarin, if that is the nerve agent, we don't know that. People are jumping to that conclusion because of some pupils that were, reduced to the size of a pinprick. This all takes on the form of this very serious condemnation that's based by serious people on serious information. But it's a whole lot of spin. A whole lot of spin. Nikki Haley over at the United Nations, she played the child card. She used remarks in an emergency session to blame Russia for blocking a response to the attack on Tuesday. And she then invoked the dead babies. She said, "How many more children have to die before Russia cares?" Now consider the hypocrisy, because neither Trump nor Haley has made any similar comment about the innocent children who were killed by Trump's first big commando raid in Yemen at the end of January, including one child, an 8-year-old American daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki. But the Syrian children are convenient props to advance political and propaganda goals. Meanwhile, the mouthpiece for the Islamic State, who's been relatively silent about Trump, broke that silence with a statement, "America, you have drowned and there is no savior. You have become prey for the soldiers of the caliphate in every part of the earth. You are bankrupt and the signs of your demise are evident to every eye." It's a real Valentine. There is no more evidence than the fact that you are being run by an idiot who does not know what Syria or Iraq or Islam is. I think it should be R, but I wouldn't want to quibble on grammar with the mouthpiece of the Islamic State. Meanwhile, Trump is now blaming Susan Rice for the alleged unmasking of telephone intercepts where we knew who the Russian was, but we didn't know who the American was. Trump, quote, "I think it's going to be the biggest story. It's such an important story for our country and the world. It's one of the biggest stories of our time," he said. It's only an attempt to distract from the content of those phone calls, just like the Democrats did about Hillary's emails. Oh, they're from Russia, so you can't believe a word of them. Then when asked if Rice had committed a crime, the president said, "Do I think?" "Yes, I think." Does he just think or does he think she committed a crime? I guess we have to infer that because of his mangled syntax. Trump's comment breaks with normal presidential conventions. Typically, the president doesn't speculate on the guilt of innocence of anybody who might be prosecuted. And he didn't state what kind of crime he was accusing Rice of. And then he pivots into praise for Bill O'Reilly. "Oh, I know him well. He's a good person. I don't think he should have settled with those women. Personally, I don't think he should have settled because you should have taken it all the way. I don't think Bill did anything wrong." And you, of course, are a great judgment of sexual harassment, proper behavior when you want to grab a pussy, and that sort of thing. And so to hear you defend Bill O'Reilly just enhances your credibility even further. So here's a quote from Trump, and he plays the child card too, regarding Syria, describing the chemical attack as a horrible thing, a disgrace. "I think it's an affront to humanity. It was inconceivable that somebody could do that. Those kids were so beautiful. To look at the scenes of those beautiful children being carried out." And as I mentioned, no crocodile tears for the children that he has killed elsewhere. And while chemical weapons are really ugly and grisly and barbaric, isn't a drone strike that kills a family in their home really similar? I mean, I know that chemical weapons offend our sense of morality and normality, but a death is a death. My latest in-depth interview is being released to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. I talked with Bill Binney for almost a little bit over an hour. We covered a lot of ground. Bill Binney, former technical director at the NSA, now a sharp critic of the surveillance community that he used to work for and that he was an architect of. And in this excerpt, Bill Binney explains how he believes the reported intercepted phone calls of Mike Flynn, of Trump when he talked to the Australian president and to the president of Mexico, those phone calls were leaked. He said, look, this didn't come from foreign intercepts where the American was masked and later unmasked. He said this came from the total bulk collection of everybody's phone calls and phone records and emails. Here's Bill Binney.
Well, the only way it would have been acquired from where I sit is from NSA's bulk surveillance of everything going on in this country. That would give them the ability to go through targeting, looking at specific people in the Trump campaign to see what they were doing, as well as looking at now President Trump, then candidate Trump. So I can see that that's probably the only way they could do that. Otherwise, you know, I just think CIA has an opportunity with some of the capabilities that NSA did to do a specific targeting. Again, going at it, they would not do the bulk acquisition of data, but they would do specific targeting, going after individuals with specific computers, IPs, and phone numbers and things like that. Mm-hmm. They could do that, but they wouldn't be able to. They don't have the resources to do all the bulk acquisition that NSA is doing.
So then this whole little mini drama that rolled out last week where House Intel Chair Devin Nunes Ubers to the White House is shown Documents of intercepts that are described as incidental on the part of picking up the U.S. person, and I'll ask you to explain that in a second. But, you know, then he doesn't tell any other members of his committee, even Republicans. He holds one news conference, goes and briefs Trump on information that he got from the White House, which is a head-scratcher, and then he goes public with a little more of that. And I see this as a giant diversion, attempting to divert the attention to leaks as opposed to an investigation of the bigger picture of these allegations of Russian interference in our election.
Well, also it's basically we needed to look at both for evidence of both whether or not the Russians did in fact try to influence the election. If so, how and what's the evidence of it? So far, we've gotten nothing on that. But when it comes to President Trump and his people in his campaign being wiretapped, I mean, we have at least some evidence of that with the conversations of the president with other presidents like Australia president and the president of Mexico.
Right.
Also, we have the conversation with General Flynn. And
the full interview with Bill Binney, it's well worth listening to as soon as you have the time. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, Spreaker, everywhere. Except, of course, the news and comment podcast you're listening to now is only available on YouTube. The in-depth interviews are not. Hope I didn't confuse you with that. But subscribers, of course, get the first crack at our in-depth interviews. People like Sandra Fish just completed an annual subscription. Chris Stubblefield just renewed an annual subscription. So did Alex Crokey and Terry Paris. I'm grateful to you for your generous support of the podcast, and I need other people to sign up to. Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click on menu, pull it down, click on become a subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page, and oh, we've got bonus books. I'd love to share one with you if you take out a new annual subscription and give me a mailing address in the continental U.S. Also with Bill Binney, we talked about his former boss, Michael Hayden, who went on to head the CIA. He's out trotting the country, promoting a book. He was on Bill Maher. Bill Maher treated him like a grandfather figure, didn't acknowledge what a liar Mike Hayden has been over the years. And when Mike Hayden says that no president has the authority to wiretap Donald Trump or anybody else, he's lying, because George Bush ordered him to wiretap every American, and Mike Hayden did it. He did it without authorization from Congress or the FISA court or anybody else. And I want to credit Trevor Tim for a piece published this week at the Columbia Journalism Review urging the media to be critical in their portrayal of Hayden. He says members of the media who play along with this fantasy land portrayal of Hayden should be embarrassed. He has a long history of making misleading and outright false statements, likely to have committed felonies during the Bush administration. And Binney didn't say this on the recording, but he told me that he and the gang at the NSA called Mike Hayden Elmer Fudd. So I encourage you to listen to the Binney interview, and I encourage you to follow the link in the show file to read Trevor Tim's important commentary. Trump did the right thing and listened to his new national security advisor, General H.R. McMaster. He has bounced Steve Bannon from the National Security Council and the Principals Committee of the Council, where Bannon had been inserted by Mike Flynn, who, as you know, got bounced after just a couple of weeks as National Security Advisor. That's a good move. And as you know, I rarely agree with anything Trump does. I'm linking to an op-ed that was published in my Sunday San Francisco Chronicle just this past Sunday, written by Janine Zakaria, a former Washington Post Jerusalem bureau chief who is now teaching journalism at Stanford. And I invited Ms. Zakaria to come on the program for an interview, and I offered her some times, and she just said, oh, those don't work. Goodbye. So I take it she doesn't want to be interviewed about this. But she wrote a curious piece entitled Israel's Tough New Law Seeks to Silence Settlement Protests. And it turns out that Ms. Zakaria, in her opinion piece, supports the efforts to squelch the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel over their illegal settlements on Palestinian land. But Janine Zakaria focuses on Jewish Americans who have been grilled when they try to enter Israel or rebuffed and deported immediately. And she talks about Israel's parliament passing a law blocking activists for activists calling for an international boycott from gaining entry to Israel. And then she narrows her her criticism, saying that, well, Jews should be able to boycott products that come from the occupied territories. Now, I certainly support that, but I support BDS across the board. And my right to direct my dollars away from Israel in order to send a message that they should come to the table, and instead of trying to squelch the criticism of Israel brought by BDS supporters, they should address our concerns. But if you read this piece, she doesn't have any concern. She doesn't raise any issue about the executive order in New York State, the bad law in California, and other efforts to punish people who support BDS against Israel. And she allows Israeli officials, she says she spoke to, say such concerns are exaggerated, and in fact, only the most vocal leaders of the BDS campaign will likely be blocked. And that's okay with her. Oh, man. What happened to our rights? And why do people want to parse them in ways that undermine, if not destroy them? Well, the battle over confirming Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court is in its final stages. And information has surfaced from, is this from, I think, Politico? Yeah. John Bresnahan and Burgess Efferett have found that Neil Gorsuch's book, called The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia, closely mimics the word choice used in a 1984 article in the Indiana Law Journal. This is plagiarism, friends. And the Washington Post, I've linked to their story, shows the very strong similarities. In some cases, there are paraphrases. In others, just a few words are changed in a paragraph. Now, it's fair to say that this should have surfaced earlier in the confirmation hearings, because Gorsuch now has no method to respond to them. Senators have no way of grilling him about this. And it's kind of like the last-minute hit that Anita Hill provided against Clarence Thomas. And I was present for the early stages of those confirmation hearings at the Senate building in Washington. So I don't know if this will have any impact. I watched about 30 minutes of Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon's filibuster from the well of the Senate last night on C-SPAN. I commend him for his protracted, he spent about 15 hours talking, and we're told that this is technically not part of the filibuster, that that would have to begin tomorrow when the Senate Republicans will attempt to use their nuclear option to blow up the cloture rule, and at that point, the debate will be closed by a majority vote, and then they will move to vote to confirm Neil Gorsuch as the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. I hope that the Democrats are successful in delaying, if not blocking, the confirmation of Judge Gorsuch. But at this point, I am not too confident. Also, I want to thank Linear Bob Getzler. He's a loyal contributor and listener to the Peter B. Collins podcast. He sent me an item that he curiously found on Yahoo News showing that Elise Hoag, the longtime organizer and the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, is really the one to credit for forcing the Democrats to confront Neil Gorsuch, forcing many who, you know, thought that the idea of a filibuster was a little too cheeky or, not proper for the Senate. Well, she deserves a lot of the credit for organizing and providing the public support that gave the senators the indication they need to fight this ugly nomination. Yesterday was Equal Pay Day. And we learned yesterday, too, that Donald Trump on March 27th revoked the 2014 Fair Pay and Safe Workplace orders that President Obama put in place to ensure the companies with federal contracts comply with 14 labor and civil rights laws, including equal pay for women. He even got Liz Cheney, the freshman House member from Wyoming, to stand there for the photo op, applauding the rollback of rules that address the disparity in pay for women in this country. Isn't that a beautiful photo op? Speaking of the power of women, Bill O'Reilly could be on his way out at Fox News because advertisers are starting to boycott his program. Next, they need to defest and sanction. But, of course, this is because of the revelation of $13 million in settlements paid out to women who worked with O'Reilly, who complained of sexual harassment and other offenses. We learned that O'Reilly's making about $18 million a year. His show generates over $200 million in ad revenue a year for Fox News. And we've got companies like Mercedes, Mitsubishi. Who else has bailed here? I've got the list highlighted. Hyundai, BMW, Lexus, Bayer, GlaxoSmithKline. We'll see how well that sticks. I've linked to a powerful and spunky commentary written by a woman I don't know, but she identifies herself as a lefty Australian, and her tag on Medium is that she's a rogue journalist. Her name is Caitlin Johnstone, and I have linked to her a very strong commentary in the show file for today's podcast. And she takes on the mental state of Democrats in America today. A couple of passages. After more than a year of being told Trump couldn't win, Trump won. Democrats stood stupefied for a moment like a little kid who just got hit with a ball but hasn't started crying yet. And then all the crazy came pouring right out in the open. It was Comey's fault. No, it was Bernie's fault. No, it was third parties. Wait, no, it was Russia. Yeah, that's it. Russia, 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 Russia. Everyone who says we're acting crazy right now is a Russian agent. Isn't the CIA awesome? Gosh, I love the CIA. Also, Dick Cheney and John McCain, they're great too. Know who I hate, though? Russia. Did you know Russian bots convinced Sanders supporters to hate Hillary Clinton? Also, any Sanders supporters you saw criticizing Hillary were actually Russian bots disguised as Bernie bros. Basically, Hillary was perfect. The DNC scandal never happened. If you think you hated Hillary, you imagined it. Have I mentioned I hate Russia? They committed an act of war against us, you know. War, 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 war. I like war now. Not Russia, though. Have I mentioned I hate Russia? I mean, this is really brilliant stream of consciousness ranting. Sheer yammering lunacy, she says. It's like the lifetime's worth of consent manufacturing establishment media propaganda they'd been spoon-fed since birth suddenly started to make them sick. All the psychological abuse America's rank-and-file political left have been suffering at the hands of the oligarchy is now spewing out in a jumbled hot mess of gibberish and McCarthyism, and they don't know how to make it stop. This is a delicious word salad. Put your favorite dressing on it. And here's her closer. You know, all this war talk is getting scary. You know, Dick Cheney is really not your friend. I'm not a Russian agent telling you this. I'm not a sexist Bernie bro. I'm nothing special, just someone who stopped believing the lies. You can do this too. I stand nothing to gain from lying to you, but the plutocrats who own your government and your media certainly do. Stop trusting these monsters. Stop believing the lies. And finally today, my friend Joe Lauria, who is an independent correspondent who covers the UN and trots the globe, I just learned that he's got a book coming out in June. He is the editor and annotator of How I Lost by Hillary Clinton. And drawing on WikiLeaks releases of Clinton's talks at Goldman Sachs, the emails of her campaign chief, John Podesta, and key passages from her public speeches, Why I Lost by Hillary Clinton includes extensive commentary from Joe Lauria. Well, I've ordered a copy. And we'll get Joe on the show as soon as the book is published and we have a chance then to talk about it. Thanks for listening to my ranting and raving, my news and comment daily podcast. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Smiling up.